First off, we have a story from Eureka, California, where Officer David Chavez stumbled into a night that turned his whole world upside down. This isn't your regular 9-to-5 cop tale. It's the kind of story that will have you sitting on the edge of your seat, eyes wide and heart thumping. You see, David thought he knew his town, in the surrounding area like the back of his hand. But out there in the heart of the forest, he found something so horrifying that it nearly ended his career. It's a story that will never have you wanting to take a walk in the woods again. So there I was, David Chavez, a badge in Eureka, California, just finishing up an all-nighter. The town was generally quiet, the kind of place where you knew who was getting a haircut without even asking. But that night, the scanner was alive with a strange call. Screams had been heard from a cabin out in the woods. Now, Eureka's woods are thick enough to lose daylight in, so a scream would have to claw its way through quite a few trees to reach a neighbor's ear. This all sounded very suspicious, and I still had an hour or so left, so off I went to investigate. It was the kind of route where the GPS just gives up on you. The trees were so close together, it was like driving through a tunnel of bark and shadows. And as you get further into the forest, the road shrinks, and the trees start to close in, until it felt like I was pushing my squad car through molasses with how slow I was going. The deeper I went, the more the world outside just fell away, leaving nothing but the sound of the engine and the sound of the tires. And here the air grew colder, and for a moment, I thought I saw shapes moving just beyond the reach of the headlights. As I pulled up to the cabin, that sense of isolation was complete. It was like stepping back in time, where the only things that seem to exist are the earth under your feet and the sky overhead. I got out of my vehicle and stood there looking around, assessing the situation and trying to get a good understanding of what I might be up against. That's when the silence of the forest was shattered by a scream, so human it stopped me cold. It's one thing to hear about it over the radio. It's another thing entirely to feel it in your bones. I spun around, but there wasn't a soul in sight. That's when I looked toward the cabin and noticed that the front door was swinging like someone had just run through it so fast they didn't have time to close it. Of course, I made my way up onto the porch and called out to see who might be in there. No answer, and so I slowly pushed the door all the way open and stepped inside. Inside, the cabin was completely empty. Dust danced in the beams of my flashlight, and every corner told me no one had been there for a good while. But then, cutting through the silence, a scream sharp and so human, it made the hairs on my neck stand up. But it wasn't from inside. It was coming from deeper in the woods. I followed the sound, even though my mind knew this could possibly turn out to be a really bad situation. The forest had a way of playing tricks on you, making you see and hear things that weren't there. But this wasn't that. The screams had a pattern, like words being repeated, but not quite words that I could understand. It was dark, real dark, and the only thing I could think of was how the darkness felt alive. Then I saw it. My brain took longer than I would have liked to make sense of what I was looking at. It was perched, limbs too long for its body, fingers ending in what looked like more joints than should be possible. Its skin was like the bark of a redwood, cracked and ancient. But the face, that's what got me. It was almost human, but the eyes were deep and empty, like looking into the forest at night. And it was mimicking the screams, playing them back like a twisted parrot. It would tilt its head, and a new scream would come out, each one as terrifying as the last. I stood there just staring at it, not sure if I should run or if it was already too late. It didn't seem to want me, though. It was practicing, trying on the screams like someone trying on clothes. I backed away slowly, every instinct telling me not to make a sound and interrupt whatever it was doing. I got back to the car and radioed in to say all was secure and that I'd give my full report back at the station, my voice sounding like it belonged to someone else. I didn't know how to explain what I saw without sounding like I'd lost my mind. I left the forest wrestling with how to report this encounter. Do I tell the truth about what I saw, or just say I found nothing? Ends up, I followed up with the neighbors saying it was probably just an animal and explaining to them that sometimes a fox can sound like a woman's scream. But the look in their eyes told me they knew the difference between a beast and a scream that's all too human. I even wondered if they knew more than they were letting on. I finally went home that morning with the sunrise, and the next day, I just continued on with my duties as if nothing happened. Let me tell you about Tom. His story is a curveball that you may or may not relate to. He was living in New York City, and he was a real hotshot in advertising. Then one day, he got a huge shocker and ended up in the hospital due to stress. He's lying there in the hospital room, and it's like he's seeing clearly for the first time. Said he realized that his life was all fluff and no substance whatsoever. So he quits, just like that. Packs up his fancy suits, leaves his corner office, and swaps it all for hiking boots in the Great Smoky Mountains. He got himself a job as a park ranger there. Crazy story, right? But he loves it. Tom says there's something about the trees and the quiet that feels more real than anything he ever experienced in the city. Now he spends his days telling stories about the old folklore and making sure the bears don't get too friendly. He traded skyscrapers for the mountains, and he's never looked back, not even once. Tom's days naturally connected with the Smokies right away, just as if he was part of the mountain mist that rolled over the peaks every morning. Over the years, he'd walked the trails so many times, the crunch of the underbrush was like a second language to him, one that told him exactly which small creatures were scurrying for cover as he walked by. Yet, that evening, the forest was putting out sounds that he couldn't quite recognize. He was making his rounds, checking the campsites as dusk started to fall. The job was second nature to him, a routine that seldom presented surprises. Campers would often try to catch his eye, eager to exchange pleasantries, or lure him into sharing a tale or two of what they had encountered, or asking Tom what he thought of something, or where the best hiking paths were. Tom had a story for everyone, but he never believed the stories of unknown creatures that people would worry about. Soon into his rounds that night, the first rustle came from a cluster of bushes to his right. Tom paused, his hand instinctively going to the flashlight at his belt. Bears were common enough, and he was well-versed in the protocol. Make noise, make yourself big, avoid a confrontation. Yet, as he stood there, waiting for the shuffling to reveal a black snout or the glint of curious eyes, there was a silence that felt like it lasted an eternity. Then, it moved. Not with the lumbering, noisy effort of a bear, but with a hush of leaves that sent a shiver down Tom's spine. He flicked on his flashlight, the beam cutting through the twilight like a signal flare. What he saw in that moment was etched into his memory, like the grooves in the bark of the ancient trees surrounding him. It was large, much larger than any bear he'd come across, with matted fur that seemed to absorb the light rather than reflect it. Its eyes, a piercing silver, met his gaze, and in them, Tom saw a depth of understanding, an intelligence that rooted him to the spot. It stood on two legs, towering over him, its chest rising and falling with slow, deliberate breaths. Then, the creature stepped back, melting into the thickets as though it had become one with the surrounding foliage. Tom was left with the sounds of the forest. He blinked, wondering if the dimming day had played tricks on his eyes. But no, the forest was too quiet. The usual sounds of nocturnal life stilled, as if in respect of the being that had just passed through. Tom realized he hadn't drawn a breath since the creature appeared, and now his lungs demanded air in heaving gasps. He made his way back to the ranger station with legs that felt like they were carved from the gnarled roots of the mountain. The words of his encounter sat on his tongue, heavy as stones in a riverbed. How could he tell this story? Would they think he'd finally inhaled too many campfire tales and let his imagination run wild in the solitude of the woods? No, this story was different. It wasn't a tale woven to entertain or to teach a moral wrapped in the cloak of a bedtime fable. This was real as the dirt beneath his feet and the stars that were now peeking through the fabric of the night sky. Tom understood, perhaps for the first time, the weight of a story that isn't sure if it wants to be told, of a truth that might unravel the stitches of the world you thought you knew. He could share this, cast it into the sea of stories that flowed around the campfires, and let it become just another legend of the Smokies. Or he could keep it close, a secret communion between him and the woods. Either way, Tom knew the forest had changed for him. He had become a part of its lore, a living chapter in the ongoing tale that the Smokies would whisper to those who walked its paths, searching for mysteries in the embrace of the ancient hills. It was the kind of summer in Banff National Park where the days were slow and steady and blending into one another, each so similar to the last that everything was starting to feel routine. It was 1995, and Jack, a ranger at the park, with a wiry frame and eyes that miss nothing, was looking for something to spark some excitement. He was hoping to get his patrols switched up to an area new to him, an area in more of a remote part of the park. He'd taken up the role of a ranger out of a love for the stillness of the forest, and a need to be away from the ordinary. The backcountry trails were his sanctuary, a place where things changed all the time, and he didn't know what would be around the next corner. Eventually that summer, something shifted, and the sanctuary began to whisper secrets. It started subtly enough. On his rounds, he started to notice marks on the trees. Not the usual territorial scratches left by bears, but something else, something deliberate. They were too uniform, too rhythmic, as if conveying a message. If only he could figure it out. Jack pondered over these curious symbols, tracing his fingers over the grooves, feeling the roughness of the bark. The night in question brought with it a chill that seemed out of place in the heart of summer. Jack sat in his cabin, poring over old books and maps by the light of a flickering lantern, trying to find any mention of the marks. The only sound was the soft ticking of an old clock, until a howl shattered the silence. It was a sound that seemed to come from another world, deep and resonant, unlike any animal Jack knew. It was a sound that seeped into his bones. The next day, under a gray sky, Jack set out to patrol the trails, his mind replaying the howl. It was as if the forest knew something was wrong because the usual chatter of wildlife was eerily absent. He walked, his steps measured and purposeful, though he could not shake the feeling of being watched. But no matter how many times he spun around quickly, trying to find a culprit, he found nothing. He spent hours patrolling and looking around, trying to find anything out of place or that needed his attention. He even took to using his binoculars to see if he could find anything wrong off in the distance. That's when he saw it. Up on a ridge, a figure stood in stark contrast against the sky. Tall and upright, it was motionless, silhouetted like a watchtower looking over the land. Its fur, visible even from a distance, bristled in the wind, and for a moment, Jack convinced himself it was just a bear or a large dog. But then it moved with a disturbingly human-like gait, pausing to scan the horizon. Jack edged closer, heart thudding with a mix of fear and curiosity, and he could now see the creature in astonishing clarity. Its fur was strands of deep brown intertwined with flecks of black and gray, thick and matted as if it had lived a hard life. The fur seemed to ripple with every movement. Muscles rolled beneath the pelt when it moved. It had powerful limbs ending in hands or paws that blurred the line between man and beast. Each finger tipped with a nail that was more akin to a claw, honed by survival, by nights spent in the unforgiving wilderness. The face of the creature was haunting, a look that could only belong to the infamous Sasquatch creature of legend. Its eyes were deep set, reflecting a wisdom that came from a lifetime spent in the woods. Those eyes, an intense shade of amber, flickered with a crystal clear sharpness. The brow was pronounced, shadowing the eyes, while the jaw was set strong, covered in a thicker patch of fur that hinted at an ability to endure the harshest of winters. The nose was broad and flat, flaring slightly as it took in the sense of its domain, and its mouth, though obscured by the overgrowth of hair, seemed capable of articulating sounds far beyond the range of any known wildlife. The Sasquatch's head sat atop a neck that was almost non-existent, giving it a stoic and formidable presence. It stood there, a creature of myth right there in the flesh. And in that moment, Jack knew he was witnessing a living legend, a being as much a part of the land as the rocks and rivers. This was no fleeting glimpse into the paranormal. It was a profound encounter with a being that defied explanation, a reminder of how vast and full of wonder the world truly was. The creature's gaze met Jack's, and in that instant, the ranger felt a strong and uncontrollable fear clutch at his chest. It was the kind of fear when you realize that man is not the apex predator. They stood there, man and beast, the air between them charged with an electric current. Then, with a snarl that seemed to twist the very air, the creature lunged. Jack stumbled back, his heart pounding. He watched in horror as the creature moved with a predatory grace, its limbs contorting in ways that seemed to defy nature. The encounter was brief, a mere handful of seconds, but it felt like an eternity to Jack. The creature leapt past him without touching him, disappearing into the forest, leaving behind a trail of disturbed leaves and a ranger whose view of the world had been irrevocably changed. Jack returned to town with a story no one would believe, a tale of a creature that walked like a man, but was as wild as the park. It was a tale that would follow him, a memory now etched into his being. And while life in the park returned to its sleepy rhythm, Jack knew that somewhere out there, the creature roamed free, guarding secrets that man was not meant to know. It was an experience that would stay with him forever, and a story that would sometimes drift through his dreams, but still as elusive as the howl that had first shattered the stillness of his backcountry haven. He's keeping his eyes peeled, but as of yet, nothing. Ask anyone who walked in the neighborhood back in the day. We all knew about that cat lady. I'm going to keep her name and address out of this story, but you can imagine the kind of person I'm talking about pretty easily. Middle child, grew up alone, never really settled down. Hair got gray and the cats moved in. You can imagine the house too. Cleaned once a year and only in the spring. Run by a feline matriarchy the rest of the time. Ask anyone who walked in the neighborhood back in the day. No one knew what happened to the cat lady. No one wanted to talk about it anyway. And I guess no one in their right mind would really want to talk about it. Maybe that's the real point of this story. Maybe I'm not in my right mind anymore. It was years ago now, a whole generation ago, practically. I was driving the neighborhood alone in my patrol car. It was a quiet area. I was real grateful for that throughout my career. Never fired my weapon. I was grateful for that too. But if we're talking about the cat lady, we're talking about the time I came closest to pulling the trigger. No one had seen her in a while. They'd only seen her cats, split into two brooding factions amidst her unexplained disappearance. Half of them scratched at her front door, seeking a dim reprieve from the scalding summer heat. The other half stared out from her windows, wide-eyed and meowing at anyone who stopped to listen. It was probably the cats that made the neighbors so nervous. Those cats were the whole reason I even got the call for the wellness check. Now you get it, don't you? I'm uniquely qualified to tell this story, because I'm the one who found her. There are only a few people who saw what really happened that day. The rest of them are still gainfully employed, and thereby, I predict, a little more tight-lipped than I've become in my old age. Their careers as paramedics lasted longer than my career as an officer of the law, apparently. Anyway, the visit started routine-like. I knocked. I called out. No response, predictably. I called for medical support. I could already smell the answer to the most important question. What had happened here? I checked, tentatively, if the door was open. It was. Swung loosely from my hands. I had to lift my feet to clear a path for the tides of cats that ran in and out from the entryway. The factions were swapping sides, I guess. Each one had convinced themselves that the other group had it better. They hadn't yet discovered that in this situation, everyone got the short end of the stick. I called animal control too. Then I went inside. I'd already painted the scene in my mind. I'd find the cat lady in her bed, I told myself. There'd be a few days worth of decomposition, but she'd still be recognizable for what she had been. I held my breath and tried not to choke on the acidic sting that hammered its way into my nostrils. My eyes were watering. I was already getting nauseous. I called out again just in case. When I heard something move, something heavier than a cat, I stopped. "Hello?" I announced myself yet again. Another shift of weight came from somewhere in the belly of the house. I heard something thud against the wall. I moved quicker, suddenly aware that I might have misread the situation entirely. I was in such a hurry that I forgot to call for more backup. Whatever it was, danger was the furthest thing from my mind. I pushed my way into the house, nudged a few of the frantic cats aside, and finally arrived at what I expected was the bedroom door. The shuffling sound was coming from the other side. I could hear someone groaning. Yet again, the handle was unlocked. This time, as I twisted it, I held the door firmly shut. If it was the cat lady on the other side, couldn't she have let herself out? If it wasn't the cat lady at all, what was I prepared to do? Could it have been an intruder? I unlatched the safety strap from my gun's holster, but didn't draw the weapon. I slowly slid the door open and let it reveal the mystery inside. A few days of decomposition had been generous. It looked like the cat lady had been in there for a week or more. I'll save the details for another time. You don't have the stomach for what I saw, trust me. I didn't either. My lunch hit the floor. The cat scurried to investigate. I didn't have time to shoo them away, not in that moment. I still had to figure out why and how the cat lady was on her feet. She shifted and shambled, turning around in an odd jerky motion until finally we were facing each other. I heard the paramedics at the front door. They were stepping through the threshold, hurrying my way. I don't remember pulling my firearm from its holster, but suddenly it was there in my hands. I was pointing it at her, the shambling human-like shape that wanted to step toward me. It lifted its leg in vain. It stumbled, nearly fell. As the visage of the woman adjusted its weight, the paramedics arrived at my side. I know they were opening their mouths to begin the routine rounds of questions and commands. They were expecting to take control of the scene. They weren't expecting whatever she was. Then she fell. Just like that, one of her knees gave out and she fell face first onto the hardwood floor. It sounded like a bag of tomatoes had been dropped on the pavement, ruptured, exploded. I backpedaled out of the house as the paramedics continued onward. They were stronger than me. Maybe that's the reason they're not the ones telling this story. Maybe they found their own ways to explain it. But I haven't. Not yet. I stood on that porch, staring at the gun in my trembling hands. I don't know what she had become or even how it had happened. I only knew that I'd come close to making a mistake, and I carried that. Ask anyone. I was good at my job. I was. But it all fell apart after her. Some stories about my time in Iraq can only be told in broad stories. I can't get too specific. I can't give too many details. If it was only my rear end that was on the line, maybe it would be different. But there are people from that time of my life that don't deserve the trouble that transparency would bring to them. So for now, broad stories will have to do. It was 2004. It was the middle of November, but the temperature's still in the 80s. It took me a while to get used to that, trust me. Growing up in the heartland gives you certain expectations for the seasons. Where I was stationed, the seasons didn't make much sense to me. Nothing did in that desert. I guess that's what made this story possible in the first place. Life was already unbelievable. So, is what I'm about to tell you really that weird? I was left alone at our base. That didn't happen often, like ever. But we were called away en masse to support a nearby transport that had encountered an IED. My group happened to be the closest capable fighters, and so we were the ones asked to secure a perimeter around the convoy, to escort them to whatever oasis they were looking for. I, however, had just broken my hand the night before. It didn't seem major, and I wasn't looking for an excuse to go home. But that didn't stop the grunt of disapproval or the order for me to stay behind and hold our location. So I did. I spent most of the day trying to ignore my injuries. I knew medical was going to assess the wound when my group returned from their mission, and I didn't want to get kicked out of the desert like some broken toy. I could still fight. I just couldn't let them know how badly my hand was hurting. Eventually, night came and the moon followed. Our base was erected in these bombed-out ruins. In a firefight, the remains would have given us a decent amount of cover. Not that a firefight was coming, of course. The conflict had moved on long before we settled in. We were only still in the area to ensure a third party didn't reclaim it and open up one of our flanks. Anyway, I was back holding the location and combing through the terrain like a hog hunting for truffles. Out of nowhere, I catch this low growl. In hindsight, it was straight out of a B-movie. Weird and unlike anything I'd ever heard, almost comically timed. In the moment, however, it was terrifying. I hug what's left of a wall, gripping my rifle like it's my ticket back home. Sand crunches under unseen footsteps, and I'm thinking, this can't be real. Then, boom, this creature appears. Half man, half wolf. Like someone played Dr. Frankenstein in the desert. Fur blended with the darkness. Eyes locked on me. It's a standoff. Both me and the creature knows what comes next. I know I can't afford to be slow on the draw. I start shooting and this thing's dodging bullets, like it's been trained by the government. And it's circling me like I'm its next meal ticket. The howls kick in, echoing through the ruins, and I'm stuck in a showdown with what looks like a freaking wolf man. It's like the desert threw me some supernatural being to keep things interesting. Just my luck, right? I'm pulling the trigger and shooting at shadows. The monster's a blur, disappearing and reappearing like a ghost. I'm questioning my sanity. Is this some PTSD-induced hallucination or a legit desert monster? The wolfman creature locks eyes with me again, and I swear it knows more about this crazy world than I do. Then it pounces, and I'm backpedaling like a scared cat, firing off rounds like my life depends on it. Cause well, it does. Wolfman circling again. I don't know how I kept missing, you know? It was like the thing had plot armor. It was just meant to survive. Something in the fabric of this world was willing it to survive. Willing my bullets to hit nothing but stone and sand. And just like that, it vanishes into thin air, leaving me standing there, rifle in hand, feeling like I just survived a bad acid trip. I shake off the weirdness and try to resume patrol. That's what you do when things get weird, right? You sink back into routines, habit. I tried to, but couldn't. The nearby sounds of gunfire pulled me back into reality. Maybe the wolfman was just a mirage, a side effect of sleep deprivation and too many MREs. But deep down, I can't shake the feeling that I stumbled onto something bigger, like the desert's got more secrets than a politician's closet. And either way, that gunfire's real. I'm navigating this war-torn maze, and the wind carries the stench of the burnout building. I push forward, wondering if the wolfman was just the tip of the iceberg. And then, the distant gunfire turns into a full-blown battle. I follow the chaos like a moth to a flame. Cause who needs self-preservation, right? That's the first thing they drill out of you. I hit a clearing, and there they are. The wolfman and some soldier, going at it like it's a wrestling match in the desert. I pause for a sec, taking in the surreal scene. The soldier's scrapping like he's in a back alley brawl. And I figure, why not? He's one of our own. Can't leave him to his own devices. We start unloading on the wolfman together, bullets flying like it owes us money. The soldier catches my eye, and in that split second, we share this unspoken bond. Yeah, we're dealing with some kind of freak show, but we got each other's backs. It's crazy how quickly you're willing to lay down your life for somebody wearing the same uniform as you. The moon's hanging low, casting long shadows, and we're going at it, shots ringing out. The aroma of gunpowder and fur fills my lungs. I can taste blood in my mouth from clenching my teeth so hard. Somehow, we land a hit. The thing yelps like a dog. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't a cry of pain. I was expecting a second half to the boss fight, you know? But we hit it and it runs. It disappears, is more like it. Fades into the same shadows we were filling with bullets. The soldier nods. Guess they were sent back my way from the site of the convoy. Moving ahead of the rest of the group, supposed to tell me to pack up and get ready to join the others. Didn't make much sense, I know. But after the encounter, I wasn't about to ask any questions. We packed up, joined the convoy, and followed them across the desert. The guy I met, the one who helped me fight the creature, warned me not to tell the others. Told me that they wouldn't believe us. They'd send us home and commit us to a lifetime of visits to the VA. I kept quiet until the conflict ended. Now I look back and can't help but question the timing of it all. The convoy gets stranded on the same night that I encountered the beast. This lone soldier just happens upon me in the middle of that fight. And we're ordered to follow them, to abandon our post, to keep them safe, not knowing what they were transporting or why, where they were going, or what they would be doing there. But those questions don't fit in with the broad stories, do they? This is where the story has to end, because my life depends on that. I've been a bank teller for most of my adult life. I had a stint in the fast food industry, but it didn't stick. This isn't to say that my current job isn't a glamorous one, though. Most days working at the bank is as routine as any other public-facing job. And notice I said most days. I don't want to talk about most days, though. I want to tell you about one day in specific, though. So here it goes. There's one day that has kind of followed me. Even after changing branches and moving to a new bank altogether, I can't quite wipe this particular day from my mind. Maybe I shouldn't be trying to. Maybe there was a point to it. But maybe not. It was a Thursday. I remember how badly we were all looking forward to the weekend. That's my favorite part of the job, I think. Our schedule doesn't change much. The same routine that sometimes gets boring also offers us the luxury of knowing exactly when we'll be off. Weekends, holidays. You get it, right? The lobby is pretty alive with our enthusiasm. We haven't seen many clients, aside from one or two local businesses coming in to make their regular deposits. Slow days are usually our favorite. You spend Monday through Friday with the same crowd, and you can't help but feel like family. The youngest family member, or in this case, the newest member of the branch, is often the one who gets stuck with the random walk-ins. You might be able to guess it. On this specific Thursday, I drew the unlucky short straw. I was the person behind the desk when the man in the black hat walked in. It was midsummer. I didn't think anything of how ill-fitted his suit was, or how wide that aforementioned hat seemed to be. Maybe he had a job interview, I thought. He was borrowing a suit from one of his uncles. Maybe he even got the job, so he needed to come open an account to set up direct deposit. I gave him the usual greeting and smile, waiting for him to approach from the sliding glass doors. When he walked, it was with an almost robotic jerking motion. It was like he had to remember how to move, like the signal between his brain and his body was delayed somehow. His eyes and his expression told me, "Hello." They told me everything was fine and normal, but he moved like his bones didn't quite line up. I stayed polite. I asked him what sort of business he had with our bank. My eyes briefly dropped to my computer screen as he arrived at the opposite side of the counter. When I looked up and met his gaze, my skin all but crawled off my body. His expression was still fine. It was perfectly normal. If it had been a photograph anyway, it was still. It was perfectly still. His eyes didn't move, not an inch. His smile didn't waver, didn't quiver or shift. His brow stayed high and animated. His pale face might as well have been a mask. When he didn't answer, I repeated my question. He told me he had four questions about the bank, and yes, I answered them. 1. What separated us from other local options? 2. How long had we been around? 3. How long had I been working with the company? 4. How was I enjoying it? The questions became more and more personal. Although I could feel the goose flesh popping up on my arms and neck, I couldn't stop myself from answering. I was trapped in that cycle of politeness, and I had been sucked in with the easy first questions. My eyes darted around the lobby, searching for a coworker that might bail me out of the awkward conversation. They saw me. They saw my eyes pleading for help, but they also saw the man in the black hat. They saw the way his jaw moved up and down like it was operated by a lever, like he was a puppet instead of a person. It must have made them sick, sicker even than I was feeling. They all turned away, some of them headed for the break room, others for the restroom or the offices. That was the final thing he said to me. He thanked me for answering his questions and said that he'd be back. He'd be back to open an account with me, he promised. He'd be back because he liked me so much. He liked what I had to say, and he liked the way I said it. When I shook my head and tried to ask a question of my own, the figure turned away. He walked erratically from the counter and headed for the door yet again. I opened my mouth to call after him, but stopped. Something about the conversation made me feel violated. It made me feel like I'd been taken advantage of. I had, however briefly, been something for the man to prod and gawk at. That wasn't my job, I didn't appreciate that. But then I saw that he wasn't alone. There was another man outside, standing on the opposite side of the glass doors, looking in with eyes so wide that they looked like circles. He was dressed the same as the man I helped. His smile was the same, sick and plastic. He wasn't watching his friend retreat. He wasn't having a cigarette or pacing the sidewalk, waiting for his companion to return. He was just staring at me. I stared back. Then they were together outside, and the first man slapped the second on his shoulder. They opened their mouths as if to laugh, but I didn't hear anything. I don't think they made a sound, actually. I was mostly relieved that they finally, together, turned their backs on me. I shrank behind the counter as they walked away. I didn't realize it, but I'd been holding my breath. It took me a while to compose myself. I felt jet-lagged or turned around somehow. But they never came back. Or maybe they haven't come back yet. But I would hate to think it's the latter. Like I said, I've changed branches. I've changed companies. I've moved to a new town, and I help an entirely new group of people. But still, I can't help remember. He said he'd be back. The man in the black hat said he liked me. And that, my friends, still haunts my dreams. A lot of silly questions come up when I tell people I had a horse. I guess I don't look that type anymore. I know I'm about 30 years removed from any decent form of riding, so I guess I've earned all the skeptical looks and the eager questions trying to understand. Yes, the horse was mine. I had the papers to prove it then, and I have the memories to prove it now. He was a quarter horse, and he was really good in a jam. Took some urging on long rides, but so did I back then. I like being alone out in the desert, but it only takes a few days for the loneliness to creep in. Maybe cell towers have changed that now. His name was Shotgun. Called him that for the way he could break into a sprint. Tear across the earth in any direction you could point him. Get in the way of Shotgun and where he was going, and well, you might just get run down. This story isn't just about Shotgun, though. It's also about what I used to do for work. It's about me, I guess. It's about the thing my horse and I encountered out in New Mexico. I think it was 93, maybe 92. That part gets blurry, so you'll have to forgive me. I think Clinton was in office. Anyway, I worked the ranches out there. Miles and miles of untamed land, owned and maintained just for the health of the herds. Horses and sheep and cattle. There were a lot of different herds out there. The family I worked for at the time were into cattle. Dairy. Takes a lot of earth to provide for a cow. Takes even more earth to provide for the kind of cows it takes to make a decent living. They were carving one out, though, so I was going to do it, too. Shotgun and I were hired on to patrol the area. Mend fences, scare away the occasional coyote. Hunt down any strays that got separated from the pack. It was a pretty job. It was quiet. Most of the time, it was uneventful. I got a lot of thinking done back then. Most of it from horseback and the rest of it with my back on the ground. I slept out there. Can you believe that? At least we did until Shotgun and I found that thing out in the desert. The family's cattle were turning up injured. They were disappearing from the herd more frequently than usual. And when they came back around, it was always with a strange wound on their necks. 3 points, like a triangle. Scabbed over with blood, always. The cows were anemic too. That's what it's called when you're low on blood, right? Whatever it's called, that's what they were. Sluggish and weak. Took a lot of work to get their strength back. Some never recovered to their former selves. Whatever was causing it, I got asked to hunt it down. That didn't seem so hard. Whether it was a bat of some kind, I'd heard that those vampire bats are a real thing, or whether it was a rival rancher trying to cause problems. Shotgun and I could fix it. We let a bull run off, then followed him instead of rounding him up. We used him as bait. Yep, we did. Kept his trail until the sun went down and he got tired. We watched him graze. We watched him drift asleep. I think Shotgun nodded off too, but he'd earned it after lugging me around all day. I kept watch. I got to see the thing approach. It was flitting among the rocks at first, trying to stay out of sight. It was circling the young cow. I thought at first it was scared. A fox, maybe. Definitely not the culprit I was expecting. But then I got to thinking. Its movements were purposeful, and sure enough, it had circled the bull until it was approaching from downwind. Kept its scent out of the bull's nostrils. Smart fella. I had a rifle with me. I was a terrible shot, but I figured I'd need it to swing around. If I ran into any coyotes, I might need to deter one of them. If I ran into any people, well, there was a chance they'd need scared off too. I lined up the rifle and watched the creature advance from down the length of the barrel. Its arms were too long to be canine. They didn't bend the right way either. They looked, truthfully, like four human arms doing their best to mimic the movements of an animal. It turned my stomach just looking at it, watching its feet slap the earth like an open hand. Its body was canine, though. That at least made sense. A ridge of fur ran down its spine while the rest of its skin was bare and blistered. I wish for a moment that the sun was still out. I wish for a better view than what the moon could give me, but then again, maybe the lack of real detail was merciful. Maybe I didn't want to see that creature in all of its glory. It closed in on the bull, and I heard a click echo across the terrain. It was wet and dull, like a bone breaking. The thing, I realized, was unhinging its jaw. A long tube-like tongue started to slither out of the creature's gaping mouth. It inched toward the neck of the sleeping bull. I couldn't let it feed. That would defeat the point, wouldn't it? I didn't want to see the thing anymore either. I wanted it dealt with. I wanted it gone. So I pulled the trigger and sunk that bullet into the earth by the monster's feet. It yowled, startled, and cackled in a way that I think hyenas laugh. It searched for me in the darkness. I was too far away for it to spot, thankfully, so I fired again before leaping to my feet. I couldn't stick around. Shotgun was wide awake at this point, and he was ready to go, earning his name, remember? I grabbed his reins and tried to calm him, only briefly looking over my shoulder to make sure the creature had run. It was gone, all right. No sight of the thing at all. It was gone, and we were lucky, because it stayed gone too. Didn't see it for the rest of my time there. Didn't sleep outside anymore either. The encounter, for me, faded back into a memory. It became a little bit less important in the grand scheme of things. Life is full of so much weird, you know? It didn't fade for Shotgun, unfortunately. He stayed skittish after that. Didn't want anything to do with the desert or the ranch or even with me. I retired that old boy and let him live out his days somewhere pleasant. Somewhere I knew that thing wouldn't come for him. That's the story. Maybe it's silly in its own right, but I don't know. What do you think? I'm not a believer in any of the hokey stuff. You can send me all of the evidence and theories and unexplained events that you like. I don't bite, never have, and I think for the most part, I never will. I have to leave those words, I think, in there, for the most part, because I have encountered something really strange. I've seen something that I haven't been able to quite explain or identify. Maybe that makes me a hypocrite. Maybe that makes me a liar. All I can really do is tell you what happened and let you decide for yourself. I frequent Colorado pretty regularly. My family owns a condo out there. We vacation at the base of the mountain once a year or so. The rest of the year, we rent it out. Airbnb has made the whole process pretty easy. Anyway, we used to use that condo for family trips. We all traveled together and went skiing when the weather permitted. As we all grew up and grew distant, we started visiting the condo at different times. It became a little escape for each of us. Whenever the real world got too overwhelming, we could pull the Colorado seal and our vacation would inflate. I was there solo a few years ago now, hiking alone in the snowy season, which wasn't too out of character for me. I stuck to the tourist-friendly trails, even though I felt I'd been there enough to no longer be considered a tourist. The cloud coverage was pretty intense, even though the snowfall was limited. The overcast weather ensured that I had much of the mountain to myself. Humans were few and far between, at least. It got colder and more gray the further you went up, and that just wasn't the experience people were looking for. I was hunting down a bit of peace, I guess. I thought the clear air might clear my mind. That was a ridiculous thought in hindsight. I couldn't have been prepared for what I was going to discover. I slipped as I approached the summit, sprained my ankle. Rookie move, I know, but it happens. It wasn't so bad that I was immobile, but I did end up sitting in the snow for a while, trying to rest my leg. 20 minutes, I told myself. 20 minutes of rest, and then I'd head back down. I faced the slope of the mountain, overlooked the town. I could even see the building where my condo was located. My car was a little speck in the parking lot. I climbed high enough, I gathered. Even though my ankle was throbbing, I was able to take a deep breath and, sure enough, I felt better. Then something hit the ground beside me, sunk into the snow, leaving a little indentation where it had disappeared and been swiftly reburied. What was that? Before I could look over my shoulder, a white clump crashed into the powdery surface, disappeared like the one before it. Was it a snowball? My siblings and I had teased each other in similar ways. I caught myself laughing under my breath as I turned around. I was already explaining. I thought I was alone up here. I expected to see a family, maybe the kid responsible for tossing snowballs at my back. But no one was there. Hello? My voice drifted across the snow like the breeze. No response came back. Then another icy ball came sailing toward me. I had to duck this one. I hit the ground and gasped, spitting the snow out of my mouth and trying to look up from my newly prone position. Further up the mountain, further up than I could have expected, was a single humanoid shape. It had to have been 60 yards away. It didn't make sense. The gray shape was just standing there. Unless it was a quarterback dressed in Arctic camo, I was looking at someone who was terribly out of place. I warned them to knock it off and pulled myself upright yet again. They weren't throwing things anymore. Now they were moving toward me, running, sprinting. What I had mistaken for gray clothing was swaying each time their feet dug into the ground. It moved like hair. It moved like fur was covering their body from head to toe. And it was. As they closed in on my position, the dim overcast light revealed their expression. They were scowling, lips curled, fangs revealed, nostrils flared and square-like brow tensed. It wasn't a person at all. It moved like a man, but it was clearly something more primitive, taller, heavier. I turned and ran. I fell, scrambled, and ran some more. I ignored the burning in my ankle and did my best to plummet down the mountain with some semblance of control. I would have rolled head over heels if it meant escaping that thing. Whatever it was, I knew that it was chasing me. I knew that it wanted me off of the mountain. And I didn't want to imagine what would happen if it finally caught up. How far could it throw me, I wondered. I heard someone shouting and I turned toward the voice. I spotted a pair of snowboarders on a nearby ridge and turned to meet them. I practically collapsed into their arms. When they asked, I pointed. I tried to pick out the shape of the monster in the distance, but it was too hard to see. It was blending in yet again. It had disappeared in the snow or maybe even turned back. They moved forward to look for it, to explain away my exaggerated claims. I pulled them back. They must have seen the severity in my eyes, because they gave up on tracking down the creature. They helped me back to safety. I filed a report and retreated to my condo, equipped with a hot bowl of soup and enough whiskey to make me forget the day. I'm still not a believer, but maybe that's because I don't know what I saw. Until I know what that thing was, how can I know whether or not I believe in it? Maybe it was just a trick of the Colorado snow, but then again, maybe not. The autumn air bit into my skin as I trudged through the dense woods of the Pine Ridge National Park. I was never smart enough to dress for the weather, but that became the least of my worries very quickly. At the time, I was working as a travel writer, always on the lookout for the next thrilling place to write about. Little did I know that this journey would take me into the heart of darkness. I know that's a bit dramatic sounding, isn't it? I guess I was just scared out of my wits. But you can call it whatever you like. I had heard rumors about mysterious sightings in these woods. Whispers of creatures lurking in the shadows. Creatures that defied explanation. Intrigued, I decided to investigate, thinking it would make for a fascinating piece. Armed with my camera, notepad, and a healthy dose of skepticism, I set out. The trees stood tall, their skeletal branches clawing at the sky, casting eerie shadows on the forest floor. There I go again, huh? Being dramatic. I guess it's a habit of mine, considering my line of work. The pay was always better if my piece had a little flourish. I'll try to minimize it for the sake of legitimacy. But where was I? I thought. The silence around me was broken only by the crunch of leaves beneath my boots. As I pushed deeper, the air grew heavy with a stillness that had me looking over my shoulder, like when it's too quiet and you know something is wrong. I eventually stumbled upon a clearing, and my breath caught in my throat. Nestled among the ancient trees was a structure unlike anything I had ever seen, a makeshift nest, woven together with branches and leaves. My heart raced as I approached cautiously, my camera ready to capture the bizarre scene. It felt like I'd come across an episode of Survivor. Somebody was living out there, clearly. My lens focused on the nest, and I marveled at the intricate craftsmanship. It was both primitive and sophisticated, a testament to the intelligence behind its creation. As I snapped photos, an unsettling feeling boiled in the pit of my stomach. This wasn't just a story about strange sightings. It was a descent into something totally unknown. The rustling of leaves behind me shattered the silence. I spun around, my eyes scanning the shadows. A guttural growl echoed through the trees, rooting me in place. My breath caught as I saw them, figures emerging from the darkness, towering and covered in fur. The legends were true. There was something weird out here after all, and it wasn't alone. A whole family of them, standing before me like ancient guardians of the forest. My mind went to druids and shamans, words that felt like fantasy to someone living in the modern day. What I was looking at, after all, wasn't entirely human. They were shaped like men, sure, but they were double the stature of anyone I'd seen, covered in fur instead of clothes, fur that probably kept them safe from the same air that had chilled me to my bone. It was easier to imagine them as something that had stepped from the pages of a book, inserting them into my reality, into the real world. It was impossible. Panic set in, but curiosity held its ground. I dared to take a step closer, my camera still hanging from my neck. They observed me with eyes that seemed to hold a strange intelligence, a wisdom beyond my understanding. My instinct screamed at me to retreat, to escape the clutches of the forest, but my journalist's curiosity pushed me forward. I edged closer to the nest, my eyes fixed on the creatures. They communicated in low, rumbling tones, a language I couldn't comprehend. When they all turned their eyes on me, gnashing their teeth and barking, I fled. I fled without so much as a picture to prove what I'd seen. But I wasn't running home. I was just running. As I delved deeper into the woods, the atmosphere grew more oppressive. The trees seemed to close in around me, their twisted branches forming a claustrophobic canopy. A sudden snap echoed through the silence, and I whipped around to see the creatures advancing towards me. Panic gripped my chest as I turned and sprinted through the maze of trees. The once familiar woods had transformed into a labyrinth of terror. My breath came in ragged gasps as I stumbled over roots and rocks. The creatures pursued me with an otherworldly speed, their guttural growls reverberating through the darkness. I could feel their hot breath on my neck, and terror fueled my desperate escape. The trees blurred around me as I raced towards the edge of the forest. My lungs burned and my legs threatened to give way, but I couldn't stop. The creatures were relentless, shadows in pursuit, closing the gap with each passing moment. Finally, I burst through the trees into the blinding light of civilization, a road. Gasping for air, I glanced back, half expecting the creatures to follow. The forest stood silent, concealing its secrets once more. As I stumbled away from Pine Ridge, I couldn't shake the feeling that I had glimpsed something beyond the realm of human understanding. What did I come across? Was it a loving family out there, or a pack of wild animals. What would they have done if they caught up to me? They were each so massive that it's hard to imagine any type of kindness existing between them and me. It's easier to imagine myself being squished. I survived the encounter, sure, but the chilling memory of those creatures lingered. It was a reminder that in the heart of the wilderness, ancient mysteries still thrived, waiting to be discovered by those brave enough to venture into the unknown. Brave or foolish, maybe. I like to think I would have gone either way, investigated with even more tenacity if I had known what was living in there. But I sure haven't gone back. I learned my lesson. I can write plenty of captivating stories without stepping into the den of another monster. I never liked driving in the rain. From the day I first started driving, it just put me on edge. I would be leaning forward in my seat, white-knuckling the steering wheel. And then, 10 years ago, something happened that made it worse. 10 years ago was the time that my son was born. In fact, we just celebrated his birthday last week. Of course, most people say that the day their child is born is pretty unforgettable. Well, mine was too. But I think I've got everyone else beat. I don't think I could ever forget that day at all, even if I wanted to. I certainly don't want to forget it, but the magic of that day wasn't limited to the hospital room. For me, it started on the drive there. The raindrops were like a drumbeat on the windshield urging me on. My thoughts raced too. Living out in the middle of nowhere came with its perks, but that night I felt at odds with the countryside. First of all, the hospital my wife was at was a 30-minute drive. She had gone into labor while at work and had been driven there by a coworker. The relentless rain had transformed the road into a reflective surface. The dim glow of the moon and sharp yellow of my headlights were distorted by the puddles. I kept looking at the clock on the dashboard. Time seemed to be moving slowly and it felt like I'd never get there. The phone buzzed intermittently, messages from my wife becoming increasingly urgent. I could sense her panic through the text messages, wanting me to get there. As I rounded a bend, the radio crackled with static, briefly interrupting the low hum of the tires on the pavement. I clenched my jaw and frustration bubbling within me. The last thing I needed was more obstacles on this harrowing journey. The static quickly subsided, replaced by the calm voice of the radio host narrating a mundane weather update. But then, just as quickly as the radio resumed, the night sky erupted in a blaze of blinding light. My eyes widened as I squinted through the rain-smeared windshield, desperately trying to make sense of the surreal lights in the sky. It lasted too long to be lightning, and they were the wrong color for fire. No, this was different. Hovering above the tree line, I then was able to make out a glowing, otherworldly object. A disc-shaped vehicle of some kind. My heart raced, and I questioned my stressed mind, wondering if the night had finally pushed me over the edge. It must have been a hallucination, I thought. The car slowed involuntarily, as my eyes remained fixed on the shape in the sky. The once familiar grind of tires against wet asphalt faded into the background as the glowing lights captured my full attention. Then, the car engine died. Fear gripped me. My foot hovered above the brake pedal, and I watched the object as it seemed to dance in the stormy sky. If time was blurry before, it was even worse now. My phone buzzed again, startling me back to the urgency of the moment. My wife's messages pleaded for an update. I shook my head, tearing my gaze away from the metal object, and I refocused on the road ahead. I yelled at myself and turned the key. I prayed aloud, hoping it would start up. I pumped the gas pedal and punched the steering wheel, and just when I was about to give up, the car started again. As if the universe conspired against me, the rain intensified, reducing road ahead. The UFO's glow dimmed and eventually disappeared, but its presence lingered in my mind. I willed myself to focus and push forward to overcome the bizarre encounter and reach the hospital before it was too late. The road seemed to be endless at this point. Each mile felt like the last miles of a marathon. Eventually, the hospital signs appeared. I pushed the accelerator to its limit, the engine roaring in protest. Finally, I skidded into the hospital parking lot, the tires leaving streaks of water in my wake. I practically leaped from the car, stumbling in my haste to reach the entrance. The automatic door slid open, and the sterile scent of antiseptic rushed into my nose. A receptionist directed me to the maternity ward, and I sprinted down the corridor. As I approached the room, the loud squeaking of my sneakers was replaced by the echo of a baby's cries. Dread pooled in my stomach, and I hesitated outside the door. The nurse inside looked up, a mix of sympathy and understanding in her eyes. I had missed the birth. The moment was gone. A surge of emotions overwhelmed me. Guilt, regret, and anger. Had I really let some hallucination spoil this day for me? Had I really let myself be so transfixed? I entered the room where my wife lay cradling our newborn in their arms. Her eyes, tired but filled with joy, met mine. The baby, wrapped snugly in a blanket, was a tiny, precious miracle. I approached the bedside, my fingers gently brushing against the soft skin of our newborn. Tears welled up in my eyes. Tears of regret, but also tears of overwhelming love for the family that was just beginning. That's what it's all about, right? The things we can hold and touch and love. As we settled into the quiet moments of bonding, the memory of my strange sighting lingered in my mind. A strange mix of awe and frustration swirled within me. The sky had thrown me a supernatural detour. Did it know it was becoming part of such an important day? Was it a blessing of some kind, or an omen? I try not to think about the object itself anymore. I'm much more enamored by my family. I do, however, still think about the rain. And when it pours too hard, I try not to get behind the wheel, because that just doesn't seem to work out well for me.